Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Pensacola, Florida, it's time for Pensacola Business Radio. Now, here are your Business Radio X hosts.
Hey, good afternoon. Keith Overt here, Pensacola Business Radio, broadcasting live from DeVere Square. I've got some pretty fascinating guests in my studio today. I have Mr. Phil Nickenson from Android Central. Good afternoon.
Good to see you. Thank you for finally inviting me.
I know. You're
all
like
the way down the hall.
Four doors down, and you finally get here. So, Sissy Milford, how are you?
I'm doing good, thank you.
360 Design?
Yes, sir. And
yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And then, Mr. Dan Vega, how are you?
I'm doing great.
I don't even know what to label. You got so many things that you got your hands in.
I don't know either, but I'm hoping by the end of the show we get some clarity.
Okay. All right. That'll work. So, Phil, tell me about Android Central, because you've been down the hall for me for like a month now, and I keep telling everybody, I'm like, I don't know what he does, but that's why I've got him coming on the show. So,
my very short story is I had 11 years in the newspaper here, gave that up in December 2009 to run Android Central full time. We recognized we're part of this network of websites that writes about phones.
Yeah.
CrackBerry at the time was the big one that everybody knew. We had Android Central, we had one for Windows, one for the iPhone and all that stuff. And we recognized that Android was going to be a big thing and somebody needed to run that full time.
I love an Android.
So I gave up a newspaper career at the right time.
as print was sort of leaving, right?
Yeah, and started doing this, and I get to play with phones and tablets and all that stuff all day long. And
so you guys like totally just dissect it, figure out what, it's like the consumer reports of Android.
A little bit, yeah. I like to keep it very consumer friendly. It's easy to get into the nerd stuff and worry about all the hacking and stuff people can do, and there are a lot of great sites for that, and we do a little bit of that. But I want to help you, you know, find out what you need to buy next. Yeah, how to use it once you get it, and really what's coming on down the road.
Yeah. So we were just talking, and I know that I just found out a couple of weeks ago that there is enough technology in my phone to send somebody to the moon, basically. But these things are pretty powerful.
They're very powerful. To the point where 5 years ago, what's in your phone, you wouldn't have been able to export anywhere for fear of the government coming after you. But yeah, it's really, and I know a lot about this stuff, but it's still magical to me that any of this works together, the hardware, the software, and just the people that are involved.
And then there's that cloud thing, which I still don't, you know.
I was in China 2 weeks ago, getting to see from the bottom up, you know, from antennas to the backhaul to the people who make the hardware to the people who work on the software. And it's just really incredible that any of this actually works.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm just the guy that likes I have a Samsung Galaxy Note 5.
Yep.
Which is an Android-based platform, right?
It is.
So I'm just the guy that just likes my gadget, and I'm smart enough to know to buy the newest one that's out there because it's going to be outdated in 6 months, right?
Yep.
But for those that are like me, what else does somebody need to – what are the serious concerns with your phones these days?
And it's kind of a crapshoot as to whether what you buy today is going to be not just relevant but still good in
6 months.
I'd go a little farther than that. I'd say 10, 12 months.
Yeah.
Or how outdated will it be? Because, you can go a long time, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be kept up with. It's tough to guess. Generally speaking, a Samsung Note will be pretty good because they're going to sell a lot of them. They have to keep up with them.
Yeah.
I'm using Google's new Nexus phone, which they absolutely will keep up with for a couple of years. And they come out with a new one of these every year. Other times you end up getting a loser, and it just, for whatever reason, just doesn't happen. Sometimes the software and the APIs outpace the hardware. They're trying to do a better job of that now. Two, 3 years ago, that used to be a real thing. It'd be really possible to buy a phone and just, you chose poorly.
Yeah. So, but I'm going to throw this out there because I think I've had this experience in my life. It seems to me that the cell phones tend to wear out just about the time they're giving you the new one.
Funny how that happens, huh?
Yeah. Okay. So with that being said, then a lot of stuff, you're right. It's 8 to 12 months because that's about how long I had my last one before I went and upgraded.
Sure. And it depends on how you buy it. The carriers can make it easier for you through subsidies. I don't generally recommend that because you can probably sell your own phone and your old phone and get a couple $100 for it.
Yeah.
That'll absolutely get you on your way to a new one. It's not a planned obsolescence, but look, people are going to break
their
phones.
It's a business strategy.
Oh,
let's
face it. No, I mean, handset manufacturers have to sell phones.
Yeah.
And operators have to sell phones to get you to sign contracts.
Yeah. Long so gone is the lifetime warranty.
It is a really big hamster wheel.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, so you went to China. So let's talk about that, because I walked in here one day and you were like, hey, I'm off to China. I'm like, oh, I'm never going to see Phil again.
No. Amazing. My first time over there.
Yeah.
So I went over to see Huawei, who actually makes this phone. And they do a lot more than just handsets. They also make radios and all the infrastructure that goes into, the carriers here back home being able to do anything. Huawei is one big company for that. Ericsson is another, especially in Europe.
You got to see made in China firsthand.
I really did. And I've done this before in Korea. Went and saw LG a couple years ago. And
north or south?
North.
Really?
I peeked over into the north.
And you made it back alive.
Yes. No. They took us up to the DMZ, and I actually have long lens shots of North Korea towns. So I was over there to see some of their R&D and meet some of the people who make these things and talk to them.
Why are they so largely produced over there as opposed to either here in the States or anywhere else? Is it because that's where the metals and stuff are found?
That's a good question. I'm not quite sure about that, but I mean, you got a lot of cheaper labor over there.
Oh, that's true.
It's the economics of it. It's the politics of it. Motorola a couple years ago tried to bring not so much the manufacturing, but the final assembly back to the U.S. They had to back away from that because it's not cheap to do.
Yeah.
And when you're making things in the volume that smartphone manufacturers have to make them.
Yeah, I mean, if they're dying in a year, you got to be ready to replace them.
When you talk about Apple, selling 10 million, 13 million, whatever it is, phones in the first weekend, which is
still
insane.
Waiting for their Apple phone.
Yeah. And it takes that many people to put these things together. I saw a manufacturing line when I was in Seoul, and that was just, one small line in one facility for one phone that nobody was ever going to buy anyway.
Yeah.
It's in Seoul's case, it was a bunch of women on the line just putting things together, going to the next one.
Yeah.
And to really do it at that sort of scale is just, it's mind-boggling.
Huh. Who would have thought?
Yeah, so much goes into it.
So I'm just going to go ahead and throw this out there. I can't stand iPhones.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, there's not. And I think part of that's just me growing up in the Windows-based of computers. Mm-hmm. But what are the major differences between Android and iPhone that make it such a competition?
A lot of it has to do with Apple does a really good job of putting the whole entire product together. And things are going to work together nicely.
Too.
Yeah, absolutely. Marketing. Yeah. But, yes. Do not discount that. That is a big thing that I think Google and its partners have had to come to terms with over the past few years.
Yeah, but I think they've stepped that up. I mean, Google, Android's becoming just as much a culture now as Apple was.
So you're saying, Phil, I'm not behind by not converting because my whole team is younger than me and they're all like, get on board, you're so old, get with Apple. And I'm like, no, I hate it. And I'm sticking with Android. I don't care what anybody says.
It took Android a long time. And Google and Apple come toward the same solution from two very different directions. For Apple, it was about control and controlling the hardware, controlling the software, controlling that entire experience. Google was like, you know what, we're just going to shotgun this thing out there, see what works, and then start pulling it all back together.
Yeah.
And so now they're very much approaching this equilibrium. There are something like, here's a fun fact for you. So we have the Android Central app, so you can get all our stories and all that stuff in an app. Our app is supported by something like 9,100 unique devices.
Wow.
Think about that. Yeah. And that's not even going back to the really old versions of Android. That's back to like 4.1, I think.
Wow.
I couldn't tell you what half of them are. I can pull a list. I don't know what any of them are, really. I can tell you like six.
Wow. So what else do they make? I mean, I know they do tablets.
Yep.
I know they do phones.
Are we talking Android or Apple?
Android.
Android, yeah. Tablets, phones. You can embed Android in anything you want. So I mean,
really?
It's not quite like the old WinCE days. But you're kind of getting close. Yeah, Android itself is just, it's 15 million lines of code that anyone can download and do anything they want with. Now, if you want to make it into something usable, somebody has to come up with more code so that it will work with whatever hardware you're working with.
Right.
If you're familiar with drivers on Windows, it's very much like that. But you can pretty much do anything. You can control robots. You can put it in TVs. It's really
And it's becoming code. Such a huge foundation for all that stuff. So it's almost like you have to include them. You have to invite them to the dance.
No, you really don't. You just have to go out and get them. You could download Android right now if you wanted to. I mean, there are going to be places you don't see it. You're not going to see it embedded into, you know, aircraft, you know, controls.
Right.
You're not going to see it. Chris Diegler at The Verge did a really good Q&A with, I think it was head of infotainment at GM, and some really good explanation of why you're not going to see Android embedded as infotainment versus QNX or Linux or some other embedded OS. So there are reasons to use it, and there are reasons to not use
it. Wow. I had no idea.
There's a lot going on.
You could do a whole career from this, man.
I know, right?
I've never even thought about it, but I'm like, this guy is so interesting. I want to get in this business where you go to Korea. You go, man.
I honestly, I mean, all I've ever known is that I just didn't like Apple. And I've really stuck to the Samsung devices just because, to me, they've been more user-friendly than some of the other Android-driven devices. But I've used the Asus Pad, which has Android on it. And I've just really liked that, but that's been about the only difference that I've ever been aware of.
There's so much out there, and it's almost hard to recommend because a lot of it's going to be really good, and a lot of it's going to be good enough, and a lot of it I've just never heard of and don't have any idea. It's timely right now. My one recommendation as we go into Black Friday is don't go out and buy that $20 tablet you see on sale. It will not be good.
Somebody else told me that about a laptop because we got the kids that's getting to the laptop time. And, you see all these great deals, and it's just, but when you really look into it, it's like, it's not going to process past December, basically.
Chromebooks. Think about Chromebooks.
I've seen a lot of people using those things now, so those are pretty powerful, right?
My 9-year-old is still using a Chromebook Pixel that's, 2 years old, 2.5 years old now, and it's
still hanging producing,
in there. It's just a browser, so it just updates itself whenever it needs to. You almost can't break it.
Wow. All right, so if somebody wants to get really in-depth with Android, where are we sending them?
I am at androidcentral.com.
Or you can come on down to DeVille Square.
Or, come on down. I'll show you around. My little 10-foot office.
You can meet the rest of the people in the hall that'll be in some point this month.
Yeah.
Okay, so androidcentral.com. Do they YouTube or anything else?
Yeah,
or?
I mean, it's Android Central everywhere.
Everywhere. YouTube. Well, that makes that easy for you, doesn't it?
Yeah, you can go see me on there and make fun of me there. It's a
whole brand.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm... thanks for coming down the hall with us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm out of here. No.
Hang out. No, trust me. We got lots to talk about. Yes. So, Sissy.
Yes.
From Sweden.
Yes.
Right?
Correct.
I love her accent.
So if
it's just that, it's cool. Yeah. I know.
It is so much. No, the guy who owns our company is Swedish, so much better.
Really? There you go.
I work with a couple Swedes. She sounds so much better than they do.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
I take that as a compliment.
Yes. Can you understand her more?
She's speaking English, man.
Well, yeah. So, and so you've been in the States how long?
I came over in 87.
Yeah, okay, because we were just talking about how the differences between countries and stuff, and some things are so obvious, but some are not because you've been here for so long. So, okay, so you own 360 Studio.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yep.
Tell us what you do.
We do marketing collateral for print as well as web and branding. And basically create everything you need to advertise your business. Anything from logo design to business cards, rack cards, flyers, posters, direct mail, a lot of direct mail.
Yeah.
And
that's still a pretty profitable engine, isn't it?
Actually, it is. You know, it's interesting because direct mail is almost having like a rebirth coming around.
It's all retro, right?
It is. No, seriously, it is. Because, I mean, when you think about it now, everything is online, and that's where you're having all the competition.
Yeah.
You know,
so now you show up in the mailbox, and you're different than everybody else.
Exactly. You're it.
Yeah.
And if you have
it's innovative now.
Yeah, exactly.
We actually send it direct. That's how cutting edge we are.
That's like AT&T upping the rates for the old copper lines that are still in the ground. So if you want to use those, you got to pay more, but you're cool.
Exactly. No, but as a matter of fact, printing has come a long way. Not just the different kind of papers that you have nowadays, you know. You have die cuts, you have different shapes, and you can add on neat finishes to printing. So if you have a good-looking, well-designed piece showing up in the mailbox, that can go a long way.
Yeah.
Because you have more competition online, actually, than you do in the mailboxes nowadays. So
you probably get a lot more engagement with that old school paper in your hand.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and there's a lot to be said about that because people really do enjoy having something in their hands, holding on to, looking at. And I think you keep their focus in a different way than you do online. I mean, think about it. We go online and research things, and before you know it, you know, all of a sudden you're getting harassed by a chair or something that's popping up because you happen to put it in a shopping cart by mistake a few weeks ago, and that chair just keeps showing up and showing up, and it's like, okay, get rid of this thing, somebody. And also, you know, you research, you sit there, and next thing you know, you're watching a video of a cat doing cute things or something. And it's like, cat hello, video. Ping pong brain.
I get sucked into those, I gotta admit.
And I love know, them. It I happens them. All the time.
I think I still relate to a book in my hand. I still relate to having something in my hand to refer to. Yeah. So
people do.
Even with multiple screens, which is what I've used before, whether it was just producing or working, even that, when I go to finalize some stuff, I still have to print stuff out. I still feel that I can disseminate information better when it's printed in front of me.
Exactly. And I do too.
Maybe that's just old school, but.
No, but you know, the traditional way nowadays is actually online, and that's where you're having most competition, and it's harder for you to stand out than really it is with a.
I mean, there's a reason why online advertising is still a fraction of the cost of print advertising.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Too many eyeballs for too small amount of time.
Yep. Right. And too much bouncing around.
Yep.
Yeah, but still, you got to have the balance, though. I mean, you can't really have one without the other. You got to do cross-marketing and have your social media, and you got to have your e-marketing and web and all that.
And you
got
to have a company to help you do all that at once.
I was going to say all I got to do is call Sissy, right?
Yeah.
I
mean,
it's
easier.
Yeah. Exactly.
So I want to know, so what's the town you're from in Sweden?
It's called Strömsnäsbruk.
Okay.
And I want you to repeat that.
Say that again.
Strömsnäsbruk.
You do, and you'll clean it up. That's what I always tell my kids when they say something weird like that. So I don't know if I could repeat that without multiple practice. But this is a small town in Sweden.
Yes, it is.
I want to know how you went from a small town in Sweden to your own marketing and design firm in the States.
Sure. Okay. So I came over here in 87, and the intentions was that I was going to be here for 3 months, maybe.
The visa ran out?
Yeah, exactly.
Till they kicked you out of here?
Exactly. Hang out with some friends, you know, check out the new bars in Ocean City, Maryland. That's where I was at the time. And before I knew it, I met my ex-husband over in Maryland. Or up in Maryland, and shortly thereafter, and by the way, I did work for a newspaper over in Sweden. So when I came over here, we ended up moving into Washington, D.C., and shortly thereafter, I got a job with the Washington Post at one of their printing plants and pre-press plants. And I was in the pre-press department for probably 6 years or so, and we were just talking about that. Mm-hmm. That was back in the day where
I spent a lot of hours in pre-press.
We would actually get the articles for the papers out on long strips of paper, and you would run it through the waxer three times and cut off the excess paper and with an X-Acto knife, and a lot of times you ended up cutting your finger instead of the paper, but
You know, they don't even do that here now in Pensacola.
It's retro.
Yeah.
No, it's shipped over to Mobile or something, isn't it?
That was one of my last jobs, was helping to shut down our press here and move that product. And literally you hit print and it sends a PDF to Mobile, and it's so weird.
Exactly. It's amazing.
Beautiful press over there, though. It's beautiful.
Oh, I bet. We'll have to see it.
Do you miss the newspaper days?
No, I don't, actually. But so eventually technology caught up with the pre-press of the Post as well, and we were going to go desktop, and at that point I had actually purchased my first Apple TV.
You gotta go. You can't
the 2E was awesome.
It was awesome.
The 2E was a beast.
It was a beast. And remember, you had those big floppies, and you would pop one in, and it would make all those funky noises and boot up, and then you had to came spitting out at you. And
it took like four people to move a hard drive.
I know.
Or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. Literally. And you put the other side in, and it loaded up the other half of the program, basically. And so anyway, I had purchased my first computer, and I had bought a PageMaker, I think it was back then. Mm-hmm. So when the plant decided to go desktop publishing, I was really lucky. I was one of the five people that was part of the core team to be trained in desktop publishing, and we were trained and then sent back to the department and trained the rest, and that was fine up till a couple of years later. I decided, you know, I kind of want to see more of the printing part, not just what happens in the front end, but more what happens in the press room and that part of it. So I talked to my manager and asked to be moved. And at that same time, they actually created a new position, which meant that I would be in charge of scheduling the presses and as well as purchasing all the paper and all the ink, not just the CNYK, but also PMS colors and all that. And I don't know how it is now, but back then we were actually 6 to 8 weeks out on delivery of paper.
No,
most of our paper came from Canada. And so what that all meant was that I had to learn the presses, how they ran, how many impressions you would get off a press in any given time, depending on how many pages were in the paper and how many copies were being printed. And also taking into account that we were printing a lot of the special editions of the Post. And depending on the time of the year, if it was a holiday coming up, of course, we were printing.
That would add, crazy.
It would add on literally 50 to 80,000 copies sometimes.
Yeah.
So that also affected how much paper we needed in-house. So that was very interesting. It really gave me
a whole lot of knowledge that you never thought you wanted to know, right?
Exactly.
If you've never seen...
That's the last thing I expected out of her mouth is I could tell you how much paper it takes to... I could see that.
Yeah, but it was really good because it gave me a totally different foundation and knowledge of that helped me out in pre-press again when I came around full circle and went back into I found out that I missed the graphic design. So I ended up going back when I moved down here. I went back into graphic design again or pre-press. But having that background at that point really it's been very helpful.
Sure, you had a whole picture of how it works.
Absolutely. And it's really, I mean, it made me realize it is so important to know what you do up front in order to have a great end product coming out from the press room. Presses are great. They can do a lot of things nowadays. But still, if you don't have a good design.
So when did you start 360?
I started 360 2004. I was working for a local paper at the time, and I had a lot of clients coming in and started to ask me to do freelance work for them. And it just added on. And
suckered
it got
you right in, didn't it?
It did. And I fell for it.
You're like, this could be a side income, or I could do this full time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how it happened. And I started Graphics Next at that point, and it started out being mostly graphic design and for advertising, but that fairly quickly moved was added on by marketing collateral, posters, flyers.
Yeah. Yeah, it was no longer just an ad in a newspaper.
Exactly,
you had all these other things that you can do, websites.
And e-marketing.
Yeah.
And now with social media. So at that point, I actually rebranded to 360.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right, so how much of the Swedish heritage influences your work now? Because I know we were talking about the differences between and how drastic they are. But
exactly. I would say a lot.
Yeah?
I still refer to, I refer back to Swedish magazines and stuff. I go back constantly and research and try to keep up with what's new over there, what colors are going on right now and font treatments and what's new in design.
A lot different over there than what we're doing here?
I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think design
overall
is
cool because they sort of give you a signature look.
Yeah, I think so. It's more, it's very minimalistic and transparent over there. And I try to implement that in my designs over here. And so, yeah.
Okay, so what's 4D?
4D is actually...
I think I know what 4D is, but it's hard enough to look through the 3D glasses.
Well, I was thinking of completely something else.
Of course.
It's 4D is our design process, if you wish. When a new client comes in, we actually have four steps that we go through. And it's the discover step or phase. It's the first one where we sit down with the client and look at what the need is. Is it a product that's already existing that needs to be redone? Is there something wrong with it? Or is it a completely new product? Is it a logo design for a new business? Or what is it that's, what the client needs? So we do a lot of research in that phase and brainstorm and come up with concepts or briefs that we present to the
client. You move in, don't you?
We move in pretty much,
Your
but you know,
all
it's very important though to say in that phase and throughout all the phases.
Yeah.
I always make a point of keeping the client very involved.
Yeah,
and I find that they find it interesting. They may not sound always really say too much about it or whatever, but they find it interesting to just be part of it and see what's going on.
I'm sure
and
it's a fantastic discovery process. You know, a really good discovery process between. I mean,
absolutely.
If you're going to be somebody's marketing guru or designer,
you kind of need to live with them for a little while. Really, exactly.
Yeah,
no, you have to move in.
Yeah, you got to hang out. So.
Exactly. And after that, you know, we move into the design phase where we create different concepts that we show the client and they take a look at them and we do all the tweaks and, you know, whatever it takes to make them happy.
So when you get a new client on, what's the usual time it takes to sort of get all of that stuff done and actually get some print and some marketing out there? And I know some of that's going to depend on what they do, but...
I would say about 5 to 10 business days. Yeah,
okay. I was thinking a couple of weeks. You're not moving in. You're just hanging out on the couch.
No, when clients come in, they are in a hurry to get their stuff and they want to get their business rolling and get open and all that. So we try to move as fast as we can. Really quick on it. Now, if we're talking websites, that of course takes a little longer time. But logo design and so on,
things.
We usually I know. A logo design normally will have the first concepts to the client within 5 to 7 business days. And
all right. So I'm going to tell you what I thought 4D was, and don't go there, Dan.
I'm not gonna.
So. I see your card, your business card, and that's what caught my eye. And obviously, I sent you an invite from it, but you have the 3 actually cut out.
I do.
So that is the first time I've ever seen that in a business card.
Oh, really?
And I think it's really cool because it adds some depth and dimension and texture. And so my first thought was that you applied that in some way, shape, or form to some of the other marketing things you've done. And that's what I thought 4D was.
Oh, okay.
If that sounds like a good idea to you, I'll sell it to you.
I'll buy
it. Okay.
How much?
I will sell you your own idea
first?
Back.
Now I know what the show's all about.
Yeah. So,
it's all about the money, right?
Okay. I understand you're a trivia person.
Yes, actually. And I'm so excited about this. Thank you for asking. January 3rd, coming year, we are starting Trivia Trek, which is actually an idea I brought back from Sweden.
You won't have to pay Sweden for that, though.
Mm-mm.
Okay, good. No. Okay.
I hope not. It's not in the budget.
It's not patent pending or anything, is it? Okay,
no.
Cool.
No, but anyway, so we're going to utilize the new exercise path that's at the community center in Gulfbreeze, and it's about a mile and a half long, and along the path we're gonna have like 12 questions and
it's like life-size trivia, like
it's gonna be crazy questions. I mean, it's gonna be fun.
Okay, so are you just doing it because it's gonna be fun?
Absolutely not. No So you start out, you actually walk into the community center and get your ballot. It's a $2 ballot, and you do the walk, answer your questions, and we of course encouraging people not to use their cell phones to Google the answers. I mean, it's all about finding out how much you really know, and it's for the fun of it.
Leave
the Android at home. That's it. Yeah. And we want to bring people out, the community together, families to come out, bring your pets, your kids, you know, and get to meet your neighbors. And so the proceeds of this is all going to the new after school program at the community center, as well as local animal shelters.
No, very cool.
So, yeah.
So are you just going to ask the question, or is it going to be like, is it option A, B,
no,
or C?
No, there's going to be 3 options, A, B, or C, or
nice.
1, 2, 3.
Like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire or something.
Yeah, I
love that show.
Exactly.
Okay.
I love it.
Which means I might actually have a fighting chance at getting one of them right. So.
And so then we're going to draw one winner. The first one who's drawn with all the 12 answers is that week's winner.
Yeah.
And it will be a small prize, something just, you know, like a... $20 gift certificates to Starbucks or something, yeah, or whatever. But we are actually looking for sponsors of the gift. So if anybody's out
okay,
there.
So what's the date again?
January 3rd.
Okay. And so if somebody wants to sponsor, where are we sending them?
Send them over to me, CC at, they can either email me, CC at 360designprint.com, or go to our website, 360designprint.com.
Yeah. We don't want them calling you.
They can call 850-393-4605.
Yeah. If it's money, whoa, you can always call.
Exactly, yes.
So, okay, cool. Well, hang out with us for a little while.
Absolutely,
thanks
I will.
Thanks for coming in. And I'm telling you, I'm blown away by the 4D. It's not what I thought it was. But
me neither.
okay, Dan, I really honestly just don't even know where to start, man. You do so much stuff. So... CC said, well, let me have my friend Dan come over and he can join us on the radio. I said, okay, that's great. And then I get this media kit, this press kit. There's all this stuff. So entrepreneur, speaker, business coach, investor, all kind of, there's, I know there's other stuff there too. Yeah. So I think she just ran out of space for the sheet. So tell us, man.
I don't know. I've been trying to work on my elevator pitch for like years of like when somebody says, what do you do? I'm like, so I just kind of go with whatever I think that they're meaning. Well, this guy probably wants to hear it. That's what I do.
You know, what's funny too is that with this show in the format, I always tell people, pretend it's not the elevator speech.
Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah,
you've got more time than that. Well, so fire away.
The short version is I'm from Los Angeles. I grew up in a very broken, abusive, alcoholic, you know, situation. And I barely got through school. You know, I didn't care that much for authority. And when, you know, when your dad doesn't really care about repercussions, you kind of say, well, who cares if no one cares about me? But I got some really good advice when I was young. I always had a gift with math and numbers.
Lucky you.
So even though I was a terrible student and like literally paid my girlfriend $500 to help me take tests and like pass.
Yeah.
Because of the other thing, people took interest in me really young. And, you know, by the time I was 18, I think a bunch of big, you know, Fortune 5 guys are like, hey, can you help us work on this code or work with this or that? And that opened a lot of doors.
Wow. You like really good with math.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You were good. Telling people like what they weighed on Jupiter and stuff.
Well, yeah, I helped crack that.
Wow.
No, pretty good. I worked on code. I think when I was 13, I was living half my time at the UCLA campus.
It just clicked for you like that?
It's actually, in the last year, I talked with a top neurologist, and it's actually a condition called synesthesia, where your senses get crossed. So when people are
in
talking...
In a good way, apparently.
it's like cheating, actually. I can't take credit for it. But it's when people are talking about business or math or anything that's numbers-based, music, whatever.
Yeah.
I basically see like a landscape in my head. So, for instance, like... the number 10,000 looks kind of like a yellow fish. So while they're talking, I kind of zoom out a little bit sometimes because I'm seeing like this color and landscape fill in. And if there should be like a gray disconnect, I would stop them and be like, hey, that part right there, it's not going to work. Because the math they're now using isn't in, you know, with the rest of the math they've been using.
Yeah.
So, it's what it is. It has its drawbacks too. It's just as much of a curse. Surely, but you know,
how cool, man.
Yeah. So that's okay, led me.
So what else do you see?
Let me tell you what I'm seeing now. No, so I was young. I started coaching companies and writing their business plans. And by the time I was 19, it was kind of a running joke with the big corporate guys to say, look, before you guys do your mastermind sessions or whatever, fly down to Covina, California and have this kid kind of vet your plan and all that. And but what I figured was most people, they don't get funding or they don't write business plans just to write business plans. Majority of the time it's because they're trying to acquire capital.
Yep.
So I took a couple of years where I really got to know different angel investors, VCs, and I connected myself with a lot of those and kind of got to know them on a personal level, what they like. And so then I started matching deals where I'd write the plan and say, you know, I think I know the guy that would fund this.
Nice.
And brokering a lot of those.
You had your own Shark Tank going on, didn't
you? A little
bit.
You know? So, and that's kind of what I do now is I as a venture capitalist, I invest in nothing serious, 4 or 5 companies a year.
Yeah.
I give them capital and take a small equity stance of their business.
So I got to ask you, because I remember when I had this click it aha moment, How many more businesses did you see succeed when they wrote a business plan to actually have a plan for the business, as opposed to writing a business plan to sort of fool the bank, for lack of better terms, to get capital?
Yeah, I think that, you know, capital obviously is necessary, but where they would really, I've seen companies, so many, that shoestring budget, little more than sweat equity, they were very successful. I think having the right variables plugged in is as important or much more important than the capital. So I worked for
a huge restaurant out of Gulf Shores, and this was not something you ever expected from a restaurant, but we got into a situation once and we didn't know where to go, and the owner said, well, it's in the business plan. Now, I never in my life thought to refer to the business plan to actually figure out a situation about the business. But I remember it clicking to me like that. And I've had to write a couple others since. And it totally
It's probably
different.
One in 50. That
yeah, but it, but plan. What a totally different approach to get being successful.
Sure, yeah.
So, okay, so you're hanging out. You're kicking butt at math. You're a reality show waiting to happen, dude.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's funny that you say that. But I'm actually working on a reality show. Right
of course.
Now.
And, of course you are.
Yeah.
That but, was not scripted either.
but actually, you know, I never thought about getting into television because of this thing. Very early on, some of my mentors were like, man, you have got to get in the seminar business. Of course, these are guys that write books and they're in seminars and they're at that high level. So I was like, no, man, that is not me. I'm behind the scenes guy. But eventually it led into seminars. So I was in the seminar business full time for about 9 years. And I was actually doing a show in Los Angeles. And some dude in the audience was like, man, I work for NBC and you should come out and you should be on a talk show. You're a freak and you should. And so we met with the networks and eventually the TV thing happened.
Did he put freak in the contract?
I think he put freak in the contract.
Yeah.
Most people
do. That's okay. So let's talk about the TV show. So it's Tuesdays with Dan still, or is it just now the Dan Vega?
So we just were coming into our seventh season, and it was under the name Tuesdays with Dan, and then we kept expanding the markets. And so to be a national show, they can't guarantee every market, let's say with ABC, to guarantee it at the same time.
On Tuesday, right. Yeah.
Yeah, or Tuesday.
Yeah.
So now it's become the Dan Vega.
Tuesdays with Dan doesn't really work on Friday.
It's on Friday. Yeah, exactly. So... it's now the Dan Vega show, but we actually are on hiatus until spring because we had another project come across our desk that I thought was super interesting and we wanted to.
So can we talk about it?
Not really. No, we can talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, all right, we'll throw it out there.
Okay, so it's a reality television show. It's not about me, thank goodness. It's just I got hired on actually as to help with the writing. So one of the businesses that I invest in is we have a book publishing company and I have writers and all that. So. Because of that, they asked me, hey man, could you help write the script with this reality show? Reality shows like 20% scripted, 80% unscripted, but even the unscripted part, you give them parameters and kind of what you're looking for.
So really it's all scripted.
So, yeah. And so, you reenact.
Which
stuff.
Is funny because I remember when that bubble finally got burst through people and, oh, really?
Yeah, well, you're reenacting like, oh, that happened last month. Let's reenact that.
Yeah.
But anyways, fortunately, I helped with the first script, the first episode, and people loved it. And they said, wow, we love this. We just need 12 more. And I was like, oh, man. So I got hired on to write the show and be one of the producers. But the real reason I signed on is the family that the show is about is amazing. And then the other producer and director, they've worked on big stuff like Jurassic World, The Last Terminator. They're doing big, big things, so I wanted a chance to work with them.
It sounds to me like you have had an incredible run of being in the right place at the right time.
Man, I'm telling you, I'm not that smart of a guy. I just seem to always be standing in the right place. I don't know why.
That's all right, though. Hey, it's working
it's
out
luck.
For you.
I'm a lucky guy.
So, okay, so with that going, and then you got the TV stuff, are you still doing the business coaching, and are you still doing the speaker circuit and stuff?
A little bit. I don't do a lot of business coaching. You know, when you're coaching people, you become their therapist also.
You tell them to check the plan.
Yeah, so I'll do a little bit of coaching here and there, and I'll do an occasional seminar, you know, once every 6 weeks for charity usually. Mm-hmm. But I'm not really pursuing those very heavily
at all. All right, so, but you still have your hands in that. Plus, you've got, you're doing the investing, so you've got other companies that you have to keep up with. Okay, so I got a question.
Okay.
With a plate that full, what are you, like 900 hours a week or what?
Actually, my assistant's sitting right next to me, so he knows the truth. But honestly, it's quite the opposite. I think that if I was trying to manage those things, it would be impossible.
Sure.
But one rule about the investing side of it is I don't invest in just great products or great projects. They have to have a team of operations.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be into the cog in the machine. So I usually come in, standard day, I come in around 10 or 11, and I try to cut out around 4.
Nice.
So I don't put in too many hours.
Yeah, but, I hear you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and your creative freedom just strikes when it strikes. Yeah. So I would assume that there's also times you wake up in the middle of the night, you've got great ideas.
All the time.
Yeah. So how many people is the TV show reaching?
It goes out to about 40 million homes a week.
Yeah.
Or per episode.
So you'll take the spring off or off till spring?
Off till spring. So we just wrapped season 6 a few months ago, and then we'll start airing again in the spring. And then this new reality show also, which is called The Martellis, will start airing in the spring as well.
They're Italian family?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you the quick premise if you want. It's similar. I hate to say Duck Dynasty, but it's very similar to like the Italian version of Duck Dynasty. It's about this Italian family that immigrated over to Ellis Island, came from nothing. The grandkids worked their way up to running a multi-million dollar national company in a really small town. And it's all family owned and operated. Yeah. The wives work there. The husbands work there. The grandkids, tons of drama.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, they really come together and back each other and all that. And they happen to live in Pensacola, which is why one of the reasons I'm here. And so the film crew drove down, and we've been trying to knock out as much as we can. But phenomenal family. I think the show is going to do really well. And it's an interesting thing. They kind of have that whole, you know, I don't want to say mafia thing going, but it's...
Well, you can say the Italian family minus the Sopranos. Yeah. That's okay.
Okay, cool.
So, and I'm Italian, so I grew up that way. Yeah. I know. And then I've been in a business where it was all family, so I can understand that dynamic.
Everything is like, what are you kidding me?
Yeah. Get real already. Yeah. Which is great. I'll watch it just for that. So, okay, so how did you get here? I mean, is that why you're here for that show, or...
No, actually...
you said I'm out of later L.A.?
Well, kind of. I started actually, some of our best family friends, as I was a kid, since 3 years old probably, they moved from California to the Pensacola-Perdido Key area. And so throughout, you know, growing up, even through high school, I would come down, get the whole beach condo thing for a month or a week. And
sucks you in, man.
We just knew the area really well. My wife was born in Germany, but I met her in the Gulf Coast as well. And so when we had a child, we knew eventually we don't want to raise them in a city. We wanted to come to a better place to raise a kid. So this is where we landed.
That's cool, man. So you're going to hang out for a little while?
Yeah, we're going to hang out.
Yeah, I think you'll like it. So, okay, let's talk about this. We're getting to time here, but what else are you working on?
Well, right now my attention is on this new show. I got a call yesterday from an investor that's like, hey, man, would you be interested in doing this reality show in Tuscaloosa coming out? And I'm like, what is this reality? I don't know really much about TV, but I may look
apparently
at
you're
like
the
that.
Expert.
But and we have the book publishing company and a few other things. But right now my big focus is just have fun, go with the flow a little bit, and you know, my overall vision is just to help as many people as possible get on the path that they're looking for to
very cool some success. So you've got the publishing company. How many have you written books?
No, actually, I'm so busy trying to help other people complete their projects.
they're writing them.
Oh,
you're,
my gosh.
You're just advising.
Yeah, it's a traditional. We don't do self-publishing. It's a traditional type publishing house. It's just kind of the little engine that could.
Yeah.
So it's a small team of maybe
retro,
15
which
people.
Is the theme today. Apparently.
Yeah, it's very retro. And we actually have figured it. We've 11 national bestsellers. We've been on all the major
very
talk
cool.
shows. It's getting some traction. You know?
Good. All and right. then it won't be retro anymore.
No,
it'll
be mainstream, and we're going to get about it.
So what's the podcast? What's Blue?
Blue is a new project that, and thank you for reminding me because I forgot. But it's my big priority right now. Now, Blue is a great podcast that we're going to launch. Blue, it's BLU, stands for Business Leaders Unite. And it's a combination of a business entrepreneurial type podcast as well as mastermind group and things. So there's also teleseminars, webinars, the whole thing. But and as you know, there's a lot of groups around, networking type groups.
Well, and I was going to say, when you said mastermind, a lot of that stuff people are starting to see pop up lately.
Yeah.
So it's an older trend that has not necessarily had the exposure that it's getting now. But I see it as being a really powerful vehicle for communities like this, where you've got a lot of small business and it's really close knit. And
yeah, and it's not for everybody. You know, there's a lot of these great groups like BNI and RLI and RRE and a lot of others that people will join. And there's some real validity to those things. I think it doesn't have a lot to do with Thrive, but it's helped people survive, get an extra 6 or 8 accounts every year. Help. This is actually really showing people that have already figured out that level how to get to the next level and thrive. So in that group, I mean, there's millionaires, even billionaires, Hollywood actors. It's real national and international networking.
It's like power lunch.
It is.
Yeah.
Virtual power lunch.
So, okay, so we've got television shows, publishing companies, investors. Like, what are you, like 100 years old, dude?
No, I have a cloning machine.
Yeah.
I'm 45. It, no. Again, I don't ever invest in anything that doesn't have good people that can run day-to-days. I'm more of a supervisor role. And, you know, I'd rather put in a little money to have that freedom to make sure things. Yeah. I only get called in if things are so far off track. They're like, we need a better strategy of how to fix this.
I need some fuzzy math.
But other
please.
Than that, unfortunately, I don't get called that much. In fact, when I show up, they're like, what are you doing here? Get out of here. I'm like, okay. So,
well, that's kind of nice to know that you are more welcome not being there than
that's
there.
Right.
I mean, that's just no. That
it used
says,
to bother me, but
yeah,
now,
yeah,
not
that
so
says you're doing your job, man. That's great. Okay, so if someone wants to find out any more information about any one of the multiple projects that you're on, where are we sending them?
Well, they can go to. There's a few, but Dan Vega Sales, I think there's one. DanVegaSales.com, DanVegaPublicity.com. And they can also check out the new podcast. That's the Blue, B-L-U, Connect, .com. There's a lot of free information, a lot of free gifts for anybody that wants to go download some free stuff.
And I did notice that because I had to do a little research because when I get a media kit, I was sort of a little intimidated, to be absolutely honest. And so I'm writing the notes down on all of the stuff that he does. I was like, wait a second, I checked the website out. But I did notice that you had a lot of stuff that to me just gave the inclination of, like you were saying, you're there to help.
Yeah.
Because that's I think, I know for me, but I think for you, that's where the fun is.
Yeah, money's really never been my thing. I live like a
I can count it
like
real
a minimalist.
Well, but, you know.
Yeah, I can count it, but it's not, you know, I do everything to just try to help as many people as possible. And I give most of the seminars I do, it's usually all for charity. Yeah. I never charge anything. And so at that site, there's a lot of free downloads, how to acquire funding, how to attract good partners, lots of free downloads for people to use and hopefully give a little
value. Well, and it was also cool, too, because it's like, well, there's some validity to this guy. I'm not just, you know.
Sure.
So congratulations on your success.
Thank you. Hey, and, like I said, standing at the right place at the right time, there's a lot, too, that I'm telling you.
You know, and I'm glad Pensacola sort of sucked you in.
Yeah, I'm excited to be here. And I'm happy to be here today because you've interviewed a couple of people that I've met recently. Laura Sprague.
Yeah.
Is becoming a dear friend.
Purple Nation?
Yeah. And then you're also across the street from one of my favorite restaurants, Five Sisters.
Yep.
I've been turned on to. So I'm
have you had a Blue Dot yet?
No.
Oh, you got to do Blue Dot.
Ice cream?
No.
Burgers.
Get them while they're hot because when they're gone,
Blue
they're gone.
Blue Dot Burgers.
Yep.
All right, I'm going to check it out.
Okay, so he'll be closed. You'll have to come back. We'll go do lunch.
That sounds good.
And talk about your other 50 projects you got going on. No. So,
I'm much more interested in Phil and Sissy. I mean, I don't get the travel. I'm doing all right, but man, I don't go to Korea and China and all these cool places. So,
you know, it's funny too because sometimes we all get just. What I've learned from doing this is that we all get so caught up in our careers and our own jobs that you forget sometimes that there are some other really intriguing things that are out there. So
absolutely.
I sort of get the best of both worlds.
Oh, yeah.
I'm never far away enough from 5 other stories that keeps me so, you know, sort of blinded.
Sure.
So, so thank you because you guys were part of that today.
Oh, nice.
I want to thank all of you for coming in.
Thank
Phil, I know you have such a long walk home.
I should leave now.
You need a ride back to your office?
Yeah.
If anybody wants to get any more information, we will have all the links to Dan, CC, and Phil's stuff on our website. You can find us on Twitter at Pcola Radio X. Find us on Facebook at Pensacola Business Radio or at our website at pensacola.businessradiox.com. Again, I want to thank the three of you for coming in.
Thank you.
All right. And you guys have a great day. And you've been listening to Pensacola Business Radio, where business is good and your work matters. Mm-hmm.